Hola and welcome back to Voice Memos. In this episode, I want to talk about my Kindle journey. I just got a Kindle. Kind of a book recap, what I read this last month of July, and also just a little tangent I went on, a new zine I'm putting out on Floriography. So if that, any of that sounds interesting to you, stay tuned. We're about to get right into it. Okay, so welcome back to Voice Memos. I want to reintroduce myself because today, this episode is the 40th episode of Voice Memos, just kind of crazy milestone. So I'm Angela. I've been doing this podcast for the last about year and a half, and I basically have three pillars to this podcast: career, creativity, and self-care. And this episode is going to primarily focus on creativity, self-care, my hobbies of reading and writing. So usually I put in some like productivity tips, how I'm staying on track with my goals, and just a little life update. So yeah, these episodes are bi-weekly. You can find them on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube if you want the video version. And then also on my blog, angelageorge.com. I'm a prolific blogger. Usually like once a month I post something on there. So yeah, let's get into it. So I finished four books this month. Big thanks to my zine punch card challenge, which I talked about maybe in the last episode, maybe the episode before that. And so I filled out my punches. I did four books. That was the goal. And if you're interested in the punch card, I'll link that below, but that's a little bit of a tangent. So what I read this month was Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll, Pope Joan by Donna Wolfel Cross, Grace Year by Kim Liggett, and then Men Who Hate Women by Laura Bates. So it was a very heavy month. Even though three out of four of these are fiction, they were all very focused on difficult situations for women. Whether it was, you know, Jessica Knoll, Ted Bundy. She never mentions Ted Bundy's name in the novel, but so that we can focus on the victim's stories, but it was a very horrific incident and kind of the aftermath, the trauma to all the people that were left behind. That's what the novel focuses on. So we read that one for book club. Pope Joan, this follows the myth on if there was ever a female pope. And, I mean, at the end of the novel, Donna Wolfel Cross puts in a lot of, like, her notes on what she was reading to help inform the novel and kind of the arguments and counter-arguments for if there was actually a female pope. And, I mean, it is inconclusive. Like, there was a time where the Catholic Church wiped out a lot of documents. Yeah, Pope Joan takes place during the Dark Age, where there was not a lot of literacy, there was not good record keeping. So, yeah, there's a lot of mystery surrounding it, but it's also interesting when it does pop up in historical documents, because it's like, why would somebody lie about that or like make it up or insert that into the records? So it was a super fascinating novel, and I'm going to watch the movie with one of my besties because she introduced me to the novel and there's a movie about it. So I'm going to watch the movie, no clue if it's good, but the books, all the books this month were at least 4 stars, like really good. So I think I gave Pope Joan 5 stars and Bright Young Women, maybe I gave that 5 stars too. I don't know. Really good books this month. And then The Grace Year is actually my book club's novel for next month. So I'm a little bit ahead on book club books, which is fine. I think I did a deep enough dive on The Grace Year. I'll remember things to talk about. It kind of leads into my Floriography tangent, but we'll get there in a minute. And so The Grace Year, I thought it was going to be more like The Uglies or like something dystopian like that. But it was more like Handmaid's Tale meets Lord of the Flies. And the genre is a little confusing to me. A lot of people put it as science fiction, but I think it's just speculative fiction, which encompasses science fiction, but there's no real, like, technology or, like, space exploration, aliens, anything like that in the novel. It's very grounded in like technology of like the past. They don't have even like computers or anything like that. So speculative fiction, dystopian for sure. It's a very like oppressive society. And they send off their young women that are of marriageable age off for a year to get rid of their magic, which, so that's kind of what the novel gets into, is just the role of women in that society and the expectations that it puts on everybody. If you hear my cat meowing in the background, it's because she's hungry. She gets her refrigerated cat food like on an automatic timer in 30 minutes. So I don't know why she's complaining to me. And then the last book I read this month was Men Who Hate Women. And I listened to this one on audiobook. This one was a really tough listen because it was the straight up uncensored facts of the incel world and the manosphere. And I thought I knew what was going on in those communities. Community feels generous, honestly. Like Laura Bates in the novel, in the book, she refers to them often as like terrorists because they are. They are advocating for the legalization of rape. They are like arguing that women are inferior beings, that they shouldn't be in the workplace, twisting the narrative, saying women lie about being raped. And it just goes so much deeper than I thought it did. I thought these were just like sad men that would get angry at women, but I mean, mostly we're just on 4chan. But it goes so much further than that, and I had no idea. And honestly, it was very terrifying to listen to. So yeah, a lot of tough to read books this month, but I feel so much more like, I don't know, like just invested in what's happening with women in the country. And I mean, we're living under the Trump administration. It's not necessarily getting better for women anytime soon, but it did like reinvigorate me to just be more aware, watch for stories about women, spread stories about women, and read stories by women. So that's what I did this month. And a lot of that, I was able to read 4 books because I finally got my hands on a Kindle. It's a secondhand 11th generation Paperwhite signature edition. Signature edition, really the only thing that's better about it is it has like an auto adjusting like light mode, which has been helpful for me off and on. And then it has way too much storage. It has like 32 gigabytes. I don't even buy ebooks. I just rent them from the library or borrow them from the library. So I don't know how I'm ever going to fill 32 gigabytes of storage, but I plan on having it for like the next 10 years. So we'll see. Maybe it'll come in handy. And yeah, I got a case for it. I had a lot of stickers already in hand. I didn't need to buy any stickers to advertise that I'm now a reader or a Kindle girly. But it brings me to what I want to talk about with Kindles and e-readers in general, is like just the commodification of reading. We talk a lot about the aesthetification or the book talkification of readers and reading, and also the anti-intellectualism that comes with these book talkers largely focusing on light, beach readery women's fiction. And so, yeah, a lot of negative talk about how readers come into their reader era nowadays. And what I didn't realize was, like, yes, like, there are, like, the bookish accessories. In fact, I've even seen it in Target now. Like, in the book aisle, they have a little shelf dedicated to a reading journal, bookmarks, book lights, reading tote bag. Like, literally a little merch section in Target dedicated to reading accessories, which has not been there in the past. That is, I'm sure, a direct consequence of book talk and trying to compete with all these girlies with their Amazon affiliate links. But it's an issue with reading, because to me, reading is one of the most accessible hobbies. everyone has a library in their community. The library is free, and you can go in there and pick up a book completely for free. And it's a beautiful thing that we have so much knowledge just accessible like that. And even if you didn't have access to a library, there are digital libraries. It's so easy to get into reading nowadays. There's free ebook giveaways all the time. So there's so many ways to get your hands on a book. And so these girlies have to figure out a way to make reading make them money. And so they can only sell so many books, right? So they try to shill these accessories. And as I was getting excited for my Kindle, I was very aware of putting money into this reader industry. And what I noticed is, like, there's these Kindlefluencers. That's not a mainstream word, but these girlies are showing the back of their Kindle and they're like, let me redo my Kindle for spring or for summer or for fall. They swap out the stickers, they go into Canva and they create like a background with like a bunch of Canva images or Pinterest images, and they print that out, put it in the back of their clear case, and or they have a new pop socket they'll put on the back there. They'll even do MagSafe so that they can switch out the pop sockets more frequently. So it's not that they're just selling like cases or cute cases. They are fully like, buy a new sticker pack, buy all of this, buy a Canva template, like anything they can do to get you to buy something to like make your Kindle seasonal. And at first I didn't really get it because I am a creative. So to me, I'm just like, oh, let me make some stickers. Let me make the background for my Kindle. I'm not even talking about like digital background. It's like inside their case, a little background that they pop in. Like they're not using the stickers. And that was kind of weird to me. I had to step back and think about that because I was like, oh, the reason they're not peeling these stickers off and popping them on is because they have to swap them out so that they can sell more stickers and or maybe reuse them in a different spread. So I thought that was so crazy. Like you're not even using a sticker because you have to be swapping out your Kindle background so often. And at first I thought it was just like people are very non-committal and there's a whole thing with stickers. Like people don't like to actually use them. They're afraid like, oh, it's not going to be the right thing. And now I ruined the sticker. I'm a big proponent of just using the fucking stickers because they're cute and they're fun and they're supposed to be used. So I don't know. Like that part was just so crazy to me once I realized, oh, they're just using the Kindle to sell me more shit. Great. And so that's the part I take issue with in the book talk sphere. It's like less about reading and more about like, how can I use reading to sell you something so I can be an influencer? So I would just caution you, like if you're getting into reading, just be aware of who you're following. Are they like constantly pushing their affiliate links or are they actually like recommending books? Because I just started this podcast with 4 books that I read this month. And I would say like these book girlies, they're starting their video with, look at this cute book tote. Let's look at all the books that I bought. Let's look at my book haul. Let's look at my book accessories. It's just a very different framing. And it's a well-known established idea that buying books is a different hobby from reading books. I literally do not have the shelf space to buy more books at this point. I have to get rid of a book. It's like a one-in, one-out situation for me. So that's also why I'm like excited to have the Kindle. It's like I can buy a book at a cheaper price and it takes up no space in my house. It takes no energy really to manufacture that book, to ship it to me. It's very like eco-friendly. That was my big idea with like getting the Kindle secondhand. I'm not giving my money to Amazon. Although like in all my research, it really did seem like the Kindle is still the leader of the pack in e-readers. I was really considering the Kobo. I was considering a Books e-reader. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I want it to be waterproof. I want the backlight. Yeah, like Kindle just hit all the boxes for me. So yeah, it felt good to resist Prime Day. Buy it outside of the network a little bit. Because the thing is, like, I'm sure, I don't know who this lady is that had this Kindle for sale, but that's the other thing with these book girlies. They have like 3 or 4 e-readers because that's another thing they can put an affiliate link for, and they can be like, oh my God, you got to get the latest Kindle, even though e-readers are good for like literally a decade. The e-ink, the battery, they're a very like low energy device and they last forever. And the difference between my version, the 11th generation, and the 12th generation is like a few millimeters of screen size and a few like milliseconds of speed. That's the only innovation they made in the last like 3 years. So yeah, like just if you are going to get into an e-reader, if you're looking into getting an e-reader, I would say look on the secondhand market. Because they really do last. It's not like a phone where they kind of build it to fall apart. These e-readers, the technology is just so simple that they really do last forever. So I'm really excited. I think my Kindle helped me read way faster this month. I mean, just simply because when you pick it up, it is distraction-free. Oh, the other thing with the signature, buying it secondhand, is the signature edition doesn't have ads. That is the most fucked up thing that I found when I was researching e-readers, is like the freaking base model Kindle and the base model of the Paperwhite both come with ads, and you have to pay $20 to get the ads off. And don't come in the comments telling me like you can call customer service, because that's been debunked. They caught on and they don't do that anymore. So it's fucked. It is so fucked that you buy something and then it has ads read on it. And I really wanted to jailbreak my Kindle when I looked at the pictures online of the listing. It had the firmware that was jailbreakable, if that's a word. And I was really excited. I was fingers crossed. I'm like, please do not update between the time that you listed it and the time that you sold it. But unfortunately, it did update. It auto-updates, so I kind of expected it to happen. So I'm sitting tight until the next jailbreak comes out. But yeah, for now, I'm trying to manage my, like, any new ebook purchases through Calibre, and try, like, I'm trying to get the actual ebook into Calibre, because with this whole Amazon thing of them making it so you can't download your books anymore, I get it that it is a license to read the book, but I don't get why I can't just store the book on my local machine. It just feels like an overreach. Like, when I buy a book, I'm allowed to resell that book. I'm allowed to, like, mess it up, download. Like, I'm allowed to do whatever I want with a physical book, but with an ebook, it has DRM on it. Okay, I just thought that this wasn't recording the whole time. It is, so we're good. And I was going to investigate, what does DRM stand for? It stands for Digital Rights Management. And so that is a protection on these ebooks, usually bought from Kindle, the Kindle store, Kobo store. Like, literally all these mainstream ebook shops have DRM protections in place on the items you're purchasing. And what this allows Kindle to do, don't know everything about DRM, but it lets Kindle go in and change the cover of your book to the movie cover, the promotional movie cover. Or, I mean, if there's like a typo or something, they can go in, like, because you don't actually have the book. They are serving the book to you from their servers. So what I've done with my recent ebook purchase, Algo Speak, which is on my TBR, my digital TBR, by Adam Alexic, Algo Speak. It is a linguistic book about how social media is transforming the future of language. So I love linguistics. So this is probably the second linguistic book or third linguistic book that I've read in the past couple years. So I love learning about language trends. I bought his book from the Kobo ebook store, and I stripped the DRM using Calibre and then was able to send it to my Kindle. So I did not buy it from Amazon. And yeah, like, I don't feel bad about it because I'm not going to distribute the ebook illegally. That's the part that's illegal. And that's what DRM is trying to prevent, is the distribution of ebooks that you don't have the right to distribute. But for my own personal management of my ebook collection, I would like to have the EPUB file on hand. And unfortunately, I did not go into my Kindle store or my Kindle library and download the books before they took that away. So I'm still researching if it's possible for me to manage my Kindle books in Calibre, especially if I plan to jailbreak my Kindle in the future. I'll need to be using a separate way to manage those ebooks. But yeah, it is just very strange to me how it's managed, and it does cause a lot of fear and alarm in people that their books could get censored or deleted. And there are like a few examples, but I don't think they're very credible. People are like, oh, they deleted Fahrenheit 451 from the Kindle store. And that's not exactly how it went down. There was like an illegal distribution of it, and they had to delete all of those. But it does show that it's possible for them to delete stuff. So just for like peace of mind, I want to manage my stuff outside of the Kindle. And then I don't have to worry about Amazon meddling with my reading. So that's the tangent on DRM. So far, I'm very happy with my Kindle. I've been reading probably twice as fast because it's distraction-free. I can literally leave my phone in a different room. I can go out in the pool, in the hot tub, and it's waterproof. And it's also good to read outside in the sunlight, which is great because I spend a lot of time indoors. A lot of my hobbies are very digitally driven. So I've been really enjoying the Kindle. I think if you are the type that likes to read on your phone or on an iPad or on your laptop, I would recommend looking into an e-reader. I am the type that does read on my phone a lot, and I appreciate that the Kindle app syncs between my phone and my Kindle, because sometimes I'm just lazy. Like, I'm like, the Kindle's across the room. I'm already in bed. I'm going to read on my phone. Or when I'm like at work or just on the go, I can read on my phone if I forgot to bring the Kindle with me. It's a habit I'm working on. I want to bring the Kindle with me more. It's very portable, and I feel very secure with the case that I got for it. I got the case from Strapsicle because they are a smaller business. I mean, they're pretty big now, but they make these like Kindle straps, and I got it my favorite color, matched my nails to it. I'm enjoying it a lot. But yeah, like, and I did get the clear case, okay? And I did not use the stickers yet. I'm testing out this layout. It doesn't really work with the straps, so I'm going to commit to something probably later today. But yeah, like, just so many things to explore with the Kindle. I think it's really going to help me get through the last like 10 books on my reading goal, because my goal is 40 books this year. So that brings me to Florigraphy. Not a smooth transition at all, but I have an outline. This is next on the outline. Florigraphy is something I learned about in the grace year, and I'm excited to bring it to my book club because I'm very curious if the rest of the book club girlies knew about this before reading the grace year, because I'd never heard of this. Basically, during the Victorian era, it was very hard to, like, emotions and dialogue was very restricted, and Florigraphy was one way to get around those restrictions and convey and communicate with a romantic lover or interest, a friend, or just anyone really that knew the language. And so it is using flowers to communicate, and each flower has a different meaning, and even the way the flowers are arranged could change the meaning. So in the book, the main character comes across flowers often, and she knows what the meanings are, and the people placing flowers in her eyesight or giving her these flowers also know what the meanings are, and it's very intentional. And so at first, like, it was just a couple instances, and I'm like, oh yeah, like, flowers can have meanings. We all know, like, certain flowers have certain meanings. Like, lilies are usually associated with, like, death and mourning, or roses are just, like, beauty, love, romance. And so I was, like, not that fazed by it. But then the flowers got more and more specific, and I started to wonder, is this just in the novel, or is it outside the novel and the author is just referencing their knowledge? Turns out it is option two. It existed outside of the grace year. And I came across a digital archive from Cornell University with 94 different books that had been digitized on Floriography from the Victorian era. And it was very overwhelming. I was like, which one am I even supposed to look at? Because all of these are like over 100 pages long, and they're written in like Victorian style of like speaking. Okay, so the power went out. I am now using a little lamp to light my studio here, but it makes it feel a little bit more Victorian era. So, I mean, if I had a candle, I could do it that way too. So, I'm just going to go through my zine here, The Language of Flowers, Victorian Floriography Zine, and read to you a little bit of what I wrote here. So, like I said, I became interested in Floriography after reading The Grace Year, and because of their symbolic use of flowers to communicate. And then I became started my deep dive, and once I settled on a guide to Floriography out of the 90 plus options, I then began the arduous task of taking the scanned images of each page of the book that had the definitions, and then copying the text out of those pages. And luckily, machine learning, good use case, it could actually tell what the text was in the image. And it actually could tell with pretty good accuracy, even. And I was pasting this into an Excel or a Google sheet so that I could manipulate it and organize it in the way I wanted to. So I was trying to get the flower and the definition into an Excel sheet. And it actually, like, most of the time pasted in two columns like that, which was mind-blowing. I still had to do this, like, I want to say almost 20 times because there were 20 pages of definitions that I needed to copy. And then I had to clean up that data because sometimes the software would make a typo. And then they used those like periods to, like, sometimes you'll see that in a table of contents where it goes like periods to fill the space. And so that was a lot of data cleanup to just get rid of all those punctuation marks that I didn't want. But I got through it. And once I was done, I had a spreadsheet of 600. Almost 600 definitions of flowers and their meanings. And then I was able to manipulate that spreadsheet into another sheet that reversed it, the meanings and the flowers. And a lot of the flowers mean the same thing. So that was its own little data cleanup effort to get those unique lists and have them be alphabetized. And after I was done with all of that, I was able to format it into this zine. But that wasn't enough for me because, I mean, these works are in the public domain. So if I wanted to, I could have printed it out exactly as is and sold it even, like, for profit. But I wanted to do my own layout. So that's why I had to get it in the Excel sheet format. And then on top of that, I went in and designed my own unique alphabet of letters. This is so extra. This is why it took me so long, is because I went in and I chose, like, for the letter A, I illustrated the letter A with the aloe plant at the base of it, because according to this Floriography guide, aloe actually means affliction. So for every letter, I chose a flower that had a meaning in this Floriography language. So for B, I chose bluebells, and bluebell means constancy. I didn't choose them for their meaning. I chose them for their ease of illustration. For C, I did chamomile, and chamomile means energy in adversity, which is what I need right now with the power out. D, I did dandelion, love's oracle. So I feel like that's a wonderful meaning. For E, I chose elder, which I assume to be elder flower, which means zealousness and compassion. F, I chose fern, which is sincerity. And so just as a reminder, like all of these flowers, if you put them in a bouquet or you sent them individually to somebody at the time, they would take it to be that meaning. And not all of them are good. So we'll get there. I think I chose geranium, and geranium is one of those that has a million like variations of the flower. And so some of them here, like the basic geranium is gentility. Geranium apple is present preference. Geranium dark is melancholy. Geranium fish. See, like as I was doing this, I learned about so many new flowers. That's disappointed expectation. So see, that's what I'm saying. Like some of these, it's like you could really be pissed off with somebody and send them a bouquet and they would get it. And in the front, I also put an excerpt from the original work, which this is my prototype. So it didn't print out that great. So I have to edit that for the final work. But basically what the excerpt says is if you put the flower upside down in the bouquet, it means the opposite of what the meaning is in this book. And in some of my research, I learned if you accepted the bouquet with your right hand, it meant yes. And then if you accepted with your left hand, it meant no. And if you put it down by your side, that also meant something different. So many different things, so much nuance here. So for H, I chose holly, and holly is foresight, comma, another meaning is am I forgotten, question mark. So there's like full phrases even associated with some of these flowers and plants. K, I did the king cup, which is a cactus, a cactus flower. And it says, I wish I were rich. Like, yeah, same. Like, but what is your person, what's your receiver going to do with that information? If you're sending them a cactus flower. So parts of this, I'm like, how did people even have access to all these different flowers? So I don't know. And also this is happening in like Victorian England. So that's another whole layer to this. M, I did magnolia because I love magnolias and it means love of nature. N, I did nightshade because, yeah. And nightshade means truth, actually. But that's the bitter nightshade. I think I did regular nightshade, which has so many great meanings. Sorcery, skepticism, witchcraft, and dark thoughts. So I'm like, who's out there in Victorian England sending a bouquet of nightshade to somebody? I guess the witches out there. They're like, I'm just imagining a girly be like, I really want to fuck with this guy. I'm going to send him a bouquet of nightshade and he's never going to talk to me again because he thinks I'm a witch. So I just think that's so great. Speed run here. O for olive branch peace. P for prickly pear satire. Q for queen's rocket, which is fashionable / you are the queen of coquettes. R for rose. There's a million of them here, but the basic rose means love. S for strawberry flower, perfect excellence. T for thistle, which the common variety means austerity and the emblem of Scotland. So just in case your lover is from Scotland, you'd send them some thistles. V for violet, which is faithfulness and love. So see, another thing that means love. And then W for wheat, which means prosperity. Y, there's only one flower or plant in here for Y, which is U, and it means sadness. And then Z for zinnia, which is thoughts of absent friends. So like you'd send your friend that's like hasn't been around for a while, a zinnia bouquet, and they'd be like, oh, like, they're thinking of me, like, I should probably head over there. And so, yeah, the first half is organized by flower, and then the second half, and then I did this, like, little bouquet of basil, because I think that's so funny that basil means hate. I'm just gonna, like, send Trump a bunch of basil. And then the second half of the book, or the zine, is organized, meaning first, in alphabetical order. And let me just see if I see any, like, funny phrases out here. Am I perfectly indifferent to you? Dogwood blossom. Like, I'm going to read these with, like, some sarcastic tone, because that's kind of how I imagine it would be in Victorian era. Oh, betrayal, the Judas tree. Very apt. Betrayed, the catchfly, the white catchfly. Beware, oleander. So, like, some of these are, like, very powerful. And I'm like, what were they having to tell each other via bouquet to beware of? Or that they felt betrayed. So, it's drama. Like, this is definitely, I feel like, now that I know how in-depth it goes, I kind of wish in the Gracier it was, like, elaborated on more. And I'm wondering, like, if there's any novels out there that kind of use this. Confession of Love, Isenda Rosebuds, or Moss. Can you imagine getting a bouquet of moss and being like, okay, I guess they're in love with me. Distrust, Lavender. Like, when I see lavender, I love lavender, but I never would have thought it meant distrust. Oh yeah, and then I looks kind of funny on the meaning side, because there's just all these phrases that start with I. So, like, I feel your kindness, that's the flax. I have lost all, morning bride. I live for thee, cedar leaf. I desire a return of affection, the jonquil. I declare against you. Multiple flowers mean I declare against you. I change but in death, the bay leaf. Like, that is so intense to be sending people this. I will not survive you, mulberry. I will not answer hastily, the honeysuckle. Like, bitch, this is, like, before read receipts. Like, they're just saying, I do not have read receipts on, and I will not be texting you back. You occupy my thoughts with pansies. Like, isn't that so cute? Send somebody a bunch of pansies. That means you occupy my thoughts. And then the very last one here, zest, and that's lemons, which I see what they did there. I see what they did there. So that's my zine. I'll have it linked in the description. If I get this published tonight, I don't know, now that the power's out, I kind of have to conserve my electronics. But I wanted to finish this fucking podcast because I was already in the middle of it. So, yeah, I think I'll end it there. Just a few updates on my manuscript. I actually started querying, which is very exciting. And I needed to tell myself that these were the final rounds of edits. I'm going to start sending out the first couple chapters to agents, because it only takes me like a month to get through the edits, and it takes them 2 months at least to get back to you, except for the lady that, like, rejected me within 48 hours. That is probably because she was just on top of her inbox and I wasn't the genre for her. Fingers crossed that it wasn't, like, a typo or something, because I already sent out the letter to a bunch of other people. But yeah, like, it's very exciting. It's scary to, like, send out my work to people, but it is what I want. I want it to be published. So I'm on the querying journey. It feels good to be in those final edits. And then, yeah, still working on my theunstagram.com project, which is currently down because I have no power. But when I get power back, it will be online, theunstagram.com. And yeah, you can see all the photos I'm taking on my photography walks. And yeah, if you liked the podcast, feel free to check out my website, angelageorge.com, to learn more about the podcast, my blogs, all these other creative things that I'm working on. And I'll see you in the next one. Bye.